From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 25th day of June 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, USDA is set to approve farmers for a new carbon offset credit. A U.S. appeals court has left in place an injunction barring Monsanto from selling Roundup Ready alfalfa. And the Department of Commerce is reporting the U.S. economy has shrunk less than first thought. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also, in this half hour, I'll bring you up to date on a brand new Memorandum of Understanding signed between Geleen University and the University of Illinois this week. And at the end of this half hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast, and it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day in the wheat pit like this, lower, down 6 3/4, nearby July at $5.33, September at 5.61 1/2, 6 1/4 lower, and December wheat at 5.86 1/4 for the soft red, down 6 cents, July hard red in Kansas City, down 5 1/4 at $5.92 1/4. Back in Chicago from the corn pit, nearby July, 3.82 1/2, a settlement price 4 cents lower, September at 3.90, down a nickel, December down 5 3/4 at 4.01 1/2, and the March at 4.13 3/4, 5 3/4 lower. May corn futures at 4.21 1/2, down 6 1/2 cents. July soybean futures finished 11 cents higher at $11.96. The August at 11.27, up 4 1/2 cents. And that was the end of the green. September down 3 at 10.52. November at $10.02, down 6. And the January futures at 10.05 1/4, down 8 3/4. March soybeans at 9.99 1/4, 10 3/4 lower. July bean meal at $3.97.30, up $4.80. July oil a dime higher at $36.54. June live cattle futures 81.95, up 30 for the day. The August at 82.55, up 7 1/2. The August feeders were unchanged at 98.95. And the September's at 98.87 1/2, up 32 1/2. July lean hogs, $57.07 1/2, down 22 1/2 cents on this Thursday afternoon. You are listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like as the settlement prices come in from the crude oil pit. Nearby September at $69.50, a settlement price down at 53 cents on the day. July ethanol at $1.66.09, down 0.8 cents. The natural gas at $3.85.4, up 9 3/10 cents at this hour. July RBOB gasoline, $1.90, 5 7/10 higher. And the July heating oil at $1.78, up 4 1/10 cents. July propane futures at $82 even, or 82 cents even. That's down 9 1/10 cents. And the August contract at $83.25. That's down 1 cent even for the day. Gold futures at $9.39 and a dime, up $5. And the Dow at $84.37 is 137 points higher. The U.S. dollar at $80.39 is down 0.16. The CRB index at $253.38 is up 7.31 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like for the afternoon. An excessive heat warning remains in effect for the metro east area of St. Louis, and heat advisories are in effect for the remainder of the southwestern parts of Illinois. Tonight in Illinois and northern Indiana should be partly cloudy, a few widely scattered showers. In central and southern sections of Indiana, mostly cloudy, some showers, a few thunderstorms. Lows will range this evening from 63 in northern Indiana to 72 in the south. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny skies early, partly sunny with a few widely scattered showers in the afternoon. Highs will range from 84 in northern Indiana to 95 in the southwestern part of Illinois. A cold front will bring a return of seasonal temperatures to the area this weekend and early next week. More on the weather at the bottom of this hour.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. Time to take a look at the agricultural futures markets. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Dan, you are not at the home office today in Decatur, but you're in the largest corn-producing county in the state of Illinois. Where are you today?
I'm in McLean County, kind of driving around, looking at crop prospects, looking at the crop. I mean, we're like everybody else in East Central Illinois. There's some early crops and there's some late crops, and you know. But all in all, you have to say that this warm weather that we've had here over the past few days has been at least supportive to crop prospects.
And what do you see in McLean County, which is where Bloomington, Illinois, is located?
Yes.
So, what do you see out there?
See pretty good crops. You know, we're going to be late. We still have a lot of bean fields that need to be sprayed. But I think that's pretty well par for the course when you look at East Central Illinois.
All right. Let's talk about some of the things that did come out today. Reuters releasing its estimates, or a lot of estimates, and an average trade estimate for the upcoming crop production, for the upcoming crop acreage report, along with the quarterly grain stocks report. The average trade guess now for corn, according to Reuters, is 83.961. For soybeans, it's 78.12. The USDA is at in their March estimate at 84.98 million acres and 76.024. So USDA's, or the average trade guess, is below the 84.9, down to 83.9, down about a million acres for corn. And for the soybeans, a 76.02 to a 78.12. So they're up a couple million acres there. Do you think those numbers are close to right?
Well, that's conventional wisdom. They still don't account for the acres that did not show up on the March report. So I think if you talk to any market analyst, they still have jitters about maybe 4 million acres or up to 4 million acres maybe showing up in Tuesday's report. Now, what kind of mix it is, you know, that's kind of probably up for grabs. There are, you know, some people out there that some private estimates that suggest that we're not necessarily going to lose 1.5 million acres of corn, that corn acres could equal what USDA estimated back in March, may even could be a little higher. So just because the average trade guess, I mean, that's the conventional wisdom, and I guess I've been through enough major reports that conventional wisdom is wrong a lot of times, and of course that's when you get your limit up moves or limit down moves from that. But I guess I'm kind of in the camp that we're going to find some acres. You know, I may be wrong on that, but usually when the March numbers come in on the short side and the USDA doesn't account for all the acres that was planted the year before, there's a strong tendency that we find those acres in the June report. So I'm kind of in the camp that we're going to see larger acres. I think you total up corn and soybeans totally, you could maybe find a couple million more acres.
Well, if you're thinking that, maybe you can pull that into what you see on the charts. I guess when I'm looking at the harvest month for the corn on the daily chart and even the continuation month for the lead option, do you see a flag pattern there, and do you think that'll break to the downside then? Is that what I'm looking at?
There's nothing bearish bullish on the charts. Everything favors the downside when you look at December corn futures. I've mentioned this morning when I was talking to Dave. The first thing you look at is the monthly chart. We've got a solid monthly reversal to the downside going in December corn because we made our highs early in the month of June, And now we've really lost a lot of ground, basically starting here a week or so ago. So we're behind for the month, and the odds of erasing those losses are pretty slim unless we get a real bullish surprise come Tuesday morning. Then you closer in, look at the daily chart pattern, and you know, the daily chart pattern kind of suggests that we're vulnerable anyway on these corn going down into that 380-375 area. So we're kind of closing in this $4 psychological area. If that starts giving way, you'll hear a lot of technicians start talking about, you know, 380, 375 downside objective for these corn.
Yeah, so for those who are wanting to follow that, an outside down month, and of course we have not finished the month of June, but an outside down month in this case would say that in May we had a 460 top for the December, a bottom at 416 and three quarters, and a settlement price at up on that top at 459 and a quarter. And then so far for the month of June, we're at 401 and a half. High of 473 and a half. Well, that May high was 460, and then a low at $4 for the month of June. So it's a pretty wide range outside of what May had traded, and that generally is not a good sign. And then on the daily charts, you have a flag, and I suspect you think that's going to break to the downside too.
That's what the biases are, but we are also, if you look further down the chart, if you got any kind of technical indicator that you're looking at. They are in a deeply oversold condition. So it wouldn't surprise me that maybe tomorrow or maybe Monday that we might see a short covering rally of some kind, just in case USDA would maybe throw the trade a curveball with a low estimate. But, you know, from basically, you know, Monday's action forward, it's going to be very dependent upon what USDA puts on the table as far as planted acres go.
What do you think the acreage is going to be?
Well, my bias is that I think the conventional wisdom is wrong, looking for a decline in acres. So I guess I'm kind of in the camp that it's going to be much closer to unchanged than down a million and a half or so.
And for the soybeans?
Soybeans, I guess I agree with conventional wisdom that we're going to see an increase in soybean acres. But I also have seen some reports that basically show that maybe bean acres may not be quite as high. Now, they're somewhat puzzling when you look at some of those datas. And that's one of the reasons why the soybean market has been able to kind of hang in here a little better, I think, than corn going into this report is that there's a few private guys out there with some estimates that really don't show much of an increase. And, of course, it's been conventional wisdom that we were losing, you know, corn acres and we were going to pick up bean acres. And when you see some reports that show that we didn't necessarily lose any corn acres, and you actually maybe lost some bean acres, that gives the trade a pause in a way. And I think that's one of the reasons why the bean market has been able to kind of hold or kind of stabilize in here a little better than maybe the corn market.
Now we've taken a look at the acreage. Can we step back and take a look at the old crop corn at this point? Tell me about your vantage point from inside an end user and how you see the overs for corn in the eastern Corn Belt and how that plays out throughout the rest of the Corn Belt.
Well, I don't think it's any secret that if you did any kind of survey among country elevator points and even farmers that maybe have storage on farm, you're going to find that corn stocks are much higher than probably they were a year ago. So I do think, you know, the 1.6 billion bushel carry out that USDA is kind of projection for corn, I think that is there. Whether or not the report shows us more corn around than what we think, that's kind of a big question. I do know that from a livestock side of the equation, We have done a lot of demand destruction in the livestock industry. And I think that could be also maybe one of the negative influences that the trade is worried about going into Tuesday's report, is that we may find out that domestic disappearance over this past quarter hasn't been as strong as what the market was thinking. And if that's not the case, then you would have to expect USDA to raise that ending stocks level up some.
Is it typical for producers, for elevators to be stubborn about a corn crop after a really high price year? I mean, what I'm suggesting is that they're wanting that higher price, and will they pay the price for being stubborn and keeping that under lock and key? And I assume that's why we've got why we've got overs at this point.
Well, most of the corn that's sitting in elevators is still owned by the farmer. The elevators probably have moved out a lot of their corn because they're basically looking at basis, and you know, if they can trade it out for a few pennies gain, they do that. But most of your corn that's sitting, I think, in country elevators are still owned by the farmer. And yeah, I think the farmer, the prices have never really been attractive enough for him to kind of let go. He had an opportunity at $4 here a few weeks ago. But that always came at a time when, you know, you were looking out your backyard, especially here in the Eastern Corn Belt, and it looked like, you know, man, when am I going to get this crop planted? So, you know, when you're worrying about getting your new crop planted, that kind of takes precedence over selling your old crop corn. But now, since the new crop is planted, I'm sure there's a lot of people that would like to get some old crop corn moved. And seasonally, this is a time frame that, unless we have a major surprise or a shift into a very adverse weather pattern, it's kind of difficult to get the corn market to rally during the month of July.
Dan, thanks for joining us today.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media each and every Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
If you, by the way, would like to hear what Dan had to say again, you can do it in two ways. Visit our website at willag.org, listen to the MP3 file, or sign up for the podcast, or dial this number, 217-333-3434. We'll post a portion of that program at about 3:15 Central Time this afternoon. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take us through the agricultural news for the day.
In agricultural news, USDA will approve farmers for a new carbon offset credit that farmers could sell on the open market under details negotiated in the House climate change legislation. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson is now backing its passage after negotiating some key changes to establish a new carbon offset program. Under the program's provisions in the climate bill, USDA would write rules developing a new carbon program. USDA would certify farmers and issue a credit that they would then sell on the open market. Further, Peterson said language will be clear in the bill that greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture will not be regulated under the emissions regulations. However, the bill puts off a final determination on biofuels. Under language being crafted for the bill, USDA, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and U.S. Department of Energy will have 5 years to reach a consensus on biofuels' role in indirect land use change. A U.S. appeals court on Wednesday left in place an injunction barring Monsanto Company from selling its Roundup Ready alfalfa seed until the government completes an environmental impact study on how the genetically engineered product could affect neighboring crops. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals rejected the company's request for a rehearing of its appeal and said it would accept no more petitions for rehearing in the three-year-old case. Monsanto's only remaining avenue appears asking for a U.S. Supreme Court review. The Commerce Department today says that the U.S. economy shrank slightly less in early 2009 than previously thought, though there was widespread weakness in activity and demand was soft. Gross domestic product, which measures total output within U.S. borders, dropped at a 5.5% annual rate for the first quarter after shrinking 6.3% in the fourth quarter of last year and 0.5% in the third quarter of last year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week. Both programs you can hear online anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Up next, the University of Illinois is reaching out to the agricultural production areas around the world. As you'll hear, the latest venture brings the Midwest Land-Grant University into the heart of China's corn-growing region. Jilin is a province in the heart of the Chinese Corn Belt in the northeastern corner of the country. It, like Illinois, is also the name of the state's premier agricultural university. It is only fitting, then, that the University of Illinois and Jilin University have established a working relationship, says the dean of the U of I's Agricultural College, Bob Easter.
Jilin is one of the three northeast provinces in China. It's the grain belt of China. And Jilin is a major producer of feed grains, corn and soybean in China. And agriculturally, it looks very much like Illinois. Big fields, a lot of grain, a lot of corn, a lot of soybeans. It's important for us to be able to engage in areas that are important to cooperate, both around production technologies, utilization, etc.
Cooperation that Dean Bob Easter and the president of Jilin's Heping campus, Wen Yuhan, believe will help to solve and manage the world's food, feed, fuel, and fiber problems. The two signed a memorandum of understanding at the Illinois campus in Urbana that outlines the capacities each will bring to the table.
Research areas, teaching areas is complementary and lots of shared interests between University of Illinois ACES and the Jilin University Heping campus.
The MOU is the first step in what both universities hope will be a long and productive relationship. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. By the way, this week's signing with Jilin University is one of about 10 agricultural MOUs the U of I has with universities around the globe. In about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt about the weather. You are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's National Creamy Pralines Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1788, Thomas Blanchard was born. An American inventor, he created a machine for mass-producing tacks. And at age 13, he developed an apple-paring machine. In 1817, the first coffee was planted in Hawaii on the Kona Coast. In 1839, Gustavus Franklin Swift was born. Swift was founder of the meat packing business Swift & Company, the inventor of the refrigerated railway car, and the first to ship dressed beef to eastern markets instead of live animals. Swift also pioneered products including glue, soap, and margarine out of cattle parts previously discarded. Swift & Company was worth $25 million at the time of his death in 1903. And in 2003, Richard Plow died, an American ecologist. He was the founding president of the Nature Conservancy, and he helped found the World Wildlife Fund. In 1945, he was one of the first to warn about the dangers of DDT-deficient birds. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. On the line with us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for the afternoon is Pete Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's been oppressively hot, but it looks like there might be a cool front coming in. Will it give us much relief?
Yes, it will. This first front actually will take the edge off the high temperatures, but it'll still be warm on Friday and Saturday after the front goes by. But then we get a second cold front a little later on probably Saturday night and Sunday. And this front will bring cooler air in there. And by the beginning of the week, the temperatures from Monday through Thursday will probably be below normal again. So make the most of the warm weather while we've got it here today and tomorrow, and then I think we'll top out at just about 89, 90 tomorrow, and then we'll be in the 80s on Sunday, 70s, upper 70s mostly Monday through Wednesday. As far as weather is concerned, precipitation, we do have a band of showers in eastern Iowa right now. They extend from Dubuque down to Davenport. And they're coming into northwestern Illinois, and these will increase a little bit in intensity this afternoon and this evening. So some pretty good thundershowers I expect east of I-74 and north of I-74, where I-74 makes that bend to the east. That northern third or maybe half of the state will see showers and thunderstorms this afternoon and evening. I don't expect much precipitation with them. There's not that much moisture available, but there is a chance for some locally severe thunderstorms, although I don't think we'll see any tornadoes with this system. That's the last good batch of showers we see. Some chance of additional showers with the real front on Saturday night, and early Sunday. And then it's clear sailing through next week, so field work ought to just progress very well.
And then if you take a look into the western part of the U.S. where the hard red winter wheat belt is, and they should be harvesting.
Yes, they are harvesting. They're still been running behind on the harvest, but the good news is we're not looking for much in the way of precipitation for a change for these people. They've had an awful lot of rain this season, as you know, but they're in the hot, dry mode now, and I think they're going to stay in there, and I'm not looking at anything significant through the next 5 days, so I think we can get that harvest moving along quite well.
Earlier in the broadcast, we were talking about Jilin University, and the dean's office here on campus called me and said, hey, it's Jilin. Make sure you pronounce it correctly.
Right.
So that's right. And that is in the northwestern corn belt of China. Can you tell me, northeastern corn belt, rather, of China.
Right.
Can you tell me how they're doing?
So far, from what I've been able to see at the weather, they've been doing pretty well. They've been cool, and for a while, then the heat came on about 2 or 3 weeks ago. They could use a little moisture because the front has been stuck in the south around the Yangtze. So they may start worrying a little bit about moisture up there, but so far, so good.
And you are about to visit China, aren't you?
Yeah, I'll be out in Beijing on about July 6th or so. I'll be in China until the 24th. Going from North China down to Shanghai, watch a solar eclipse at Shanghai on the 22nd, which I usually go on these trips, have it topped off with a solar eclipse.
All right. Well, thank you much.
My pleasure.
That's Pete Levitt. I'm Todd Gleason.